Now this phone doesn't belong to me. This is someone else's phone. Now what happens is, when I touch means if or when I touch the phone, meaning I am using, I'm not going to steal it, but I'm already having some defilements in my mind, attachment. So I'm creating some defilement out of this phone because I'm touching it. I'm liking it. I'm not stealing it yet, but I'm already creating some mass defilements. I'm liking it. What if I just scan around and just snatch away and slowly sneak out of this place? Then I would have completed my asava. Or I never steal it. What I do is, so I continually think about this phone. It is someone else's phone. I walk away. Tonight I wouldn't be able to sleep. Why? Overnight, the moment I fall asleep, I would start thinking, I would dream, I would start dreaming about the phone that I touched this evening. So, and what is that? That is upadana. That says, that explains what upadana is. Now, upa means within one, close to oneself, in oneself, within oneself, close to oneself. What you grab, what you acquire, then you keep it for yourself for a long time. You will keep, that for yourself in your mind for. So that is upadana. The English translation of upadana is, second, is clinging. 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 You cling. So, upadana, the general English translation is clinging. You keep it within yourself, upadana, and you never let go of that. You can, upadana is what you grab and keep within your mind forever, like forever, clinging. Probably you saw someone or something years ago, you still think about him or that object. So that means you are having upadana, that is clinging. Now, you come up this word upadana in the Buddha's first sermon, I guess. What is the Buddha's first sermon? Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. In the Buddha's first sermon, and in that sutra, you come up with this word, you phrase actually. Panchu pa da na kham da dukkha. Now, have you ever heard this? I know for you have. Which phrase is correct? Which statement is correct, do you think? You as you think. The five aggregates are suffering. Now, in the Buddha Dhamma, the individuality of selfhood is divided into five things, as you know. Nama, the name, mind, and rupa, the body. And again, you divide into the five aggregates. You are familiar with the five aggregates. We are not going to discuss them anyway today. Five aggregates. Now, the five aggregates are suffering. One statement. The next statement is clinging to the five aggregates are suffering. Cling is suffering. Which one is correct? Second one, yes. Clinging to the five aggregates is suffering. That's one, yeah. But sometimes some people wrongfully say everything is suffering. Not everything is suffering. clinging to the everything is suffering. There's nothing wrong with everything. There's nothing wrong with the five aggregates. There's nothing wrong with you and me and anything in the world. What brings you suffering is the very clinging to whatever you see, whatever you sense. So nowhere has Buddha said that everything is suffering. Everything could become suffering based on provided you cling to it. Everything can bring you suffering provided you cling to it. When there's no padana to anything, you are free. Now, enlightened people, upon enlightened, getting enlightened, you won't touch everything. You won't do anything to the, you don't change anything. Why? Because you have changed yourself. You don't have attachment. You don't see it. Look at the things through attachment. No more attachment. So you see things differently. Recently, we in a discussion we happened to talk about what if an arhat or an enlightened person is now cutting through the jungle. He's a forest monk. He's an enlightened one. All of a sudden, he encounters a big cat, a tiger. Now, and the question was asked by a child, Pante, will the arahat run away? Will he try his best to defend himself? That was his question. I said, no, honey, he wouldn't. Then the tiger might eat him. Yeah, it doesn't matter to him because he has no attachment to his life. So it doesn't matter the tiger kills him, eats him up, or he let him go. Doesn't matter. And then he asked me the funny question, the funny Panti, what will happen to you? I said, I will run away. Or I will try to escape. Oh, meaning you are not an arahant yet? No, I am not yet. I said, oh, that's good. That's what I want to know. And he said, don't go near the tigers. But it's a very philosophical question he asked me. That's he asked the question. See, that's why I always love to talk to children. They always terrorize me with questions. I love that. Right? So it gives me different perceptions. 9 years old. It's 9. So that's when an arahat or arahat doesn't have any attachment to his life. So he would simply walk. And the tiger might. But the interesting thing, according to a lot of stories, even from stories from Thailand, Burma, when they see a jungle, when they encounter a big cat, and they would just look at the tigers and they walk away, and some they don't attack. That's another thing. If they turn back, that's when they would attack. So even you don't have to be an arahant actually, because I know some. Monks in forest monk in Sri Lanka. Recently, there was a big issue in one of the forest in Sri Lanka. Now the wildlife department came and they wanted the monks out of the forest. Some of the villagers living, there's a border village, a village bordering the jungle, and they were agitating the forest department, saying, you know, they wouldn't harm the monk. And the monk went on national TV and said, I have encountered these tigers several times. One day when I woke up, there were two tigers sleeping on the monastery ground, and they were there. They didn't harm me. So, but I'm not able to say why this, how it happens, why this. But anyway, the story is sometimes when you are not fearful of certain wildlife, they don't attack you. That's what I heard from wildlife officers. However, the child's question fascinated me. What will happen to an arahant when he encounters a tiger? Will he run away? So, but he wouldn't run away.
I have the story to tell. Tiger and lion story. I think you're very familiar with that.
That's right, yeah, because I have a lot of
Can I
bed.
just sit next to the monk?
Yeah, probably they might read your feelings, I guess, right? They might feel you. I know one German shepherd in Florida. His next door neighbor is scared of him. The first time I saw the German shepherd, and I look at him, and then he brought his piggy in his mouth, because then he was asking me to go to the backyard to play with him. And then all the his owner was kind of puzzled. But he's very rude to my next door neighbors. Probably they are scared of him. You are not scared? No, I'm not. So that's why. So he asked me to go to the backyard, start playing right away. So there is something when it comes to this emotional bond, our vibes. Right. So now upadana is one of the hardest to cut through, as Buddha says. And upadana is compared to hard nut cracking. Nut cracking. Elsewhere I came across upadana is compared to a nutmeg. You have to get the nutmegs, you have to crack the nut. You remove the flesh. You can eat the flesh is edible when you eat the raw nutmeg. There's a lot of in Sri Lanka. And then you remove the flesh, and then in the middle of this the nut. You have to crack the hard shell, and then you get the nut. So nut cracking. A lot of people use this nut cracking analogy to explain upadana, because upadana is the upadana clinging. Is the energy for our attachment. With upadana, we feed our attachment, we satisfy our attachment with upadana. Sometimes we are unable to, whether or not we are unable to fulfill our attachment, we would at least conceptualize and keep our attachment. We keep dreaming of our attachments. We keep planning of our attachment, we keep dreaming of our attachment deep in our mind because of upadana, clinging. You may or may not fulfill your attachments. But still, at least it gives a sense of satisfaction, and that is done by upadana, clinging. Like you say, one day I will get it. One day I will buy it. One day. Whenever that be, one day. When you say that, that's upadana, there is nothing wrong with that. And never to confuse your attachments are neither good nor bad, as we discussed. They are natural. Based on the goals that you set in your life, if your spiritual goal is to attain enlightenment, if you strive to attain enlightenment within this lifetime, then you need to reduce attachment. You need to reduce your clinging, upadana. So you have to block it. But however, you might have encountered that. You can dissolve a lot of upadana in meditation, right? When you meditate, you can very easily dissolve a lot of upadanas which have no basis. Sometimes some people have told me, Bhante, when I started meditating, I had this bunch of attachment, clinging to certain things. When I meditated halfway through my meditation, I felt like I'd been struggling with this feeling for a long time. It has nothing. It's nothing, really. I wouldn't go after that again. It has only given me frustration. In deep in my meditation, I felt like my body is now recovering. My mind is now recovering. My mind is relaxing after a long time. My body is relaxing after a long time. That's because I was able to get rid of that feeling of clinging, upadana. And she was able to, one lady was telling me, she was able to dissolve that upadana. She had the tiny, tiny feeling. She had a feeling of grudge because somebody insulted her like 2, 3 years ago. She was waiting for to encounter and say something against. Then I asked her, for the last 3 years, ma'am, Who has been suffering? Do you think that the who insulted you is still suffering? No, probably she or maybe she forgot it already. The moment she said that, she forgot. It's been 3 years since you started suffering. Yes, that's what I thought in my meditation. And in case you encounter her the next time, she would be very happy to see you pale, like given up. Of course, Bhante, I come from a very respectable family. In our family, we are fighters. We will never let anyone insult us. But this one insulted me. Then I told, okay, see, that's why you have been suffering. Now, it's good that you could overcome your upadana, clinging, because the next time you see her, you can surprise her. Probably she would become very sad. She would be very sad because you look much more pleasant and radiant now. Now, that's the best punishment, ma'am. Yes, I think. Okay, sir, I will do that, he says. He said. So that's the way. That's the spiritual in upadana. She had upadana too, a worthless feeling of grudge. She had clinging to it. So as a result, she's been suffering for 3 years. She didn't get anything out of her clinging upadana. Of course, she had lost a lot. She lost her inner peace. She lost her ability to focus. And she says she mi missed two exams that she was supposed to, what is called professional enhancement exams, test something that she was supposed to have for her job promotion. I said, okay, you only got promoted to another level of clinging. Yeah, please say anything to me, Vanti, because you are my friend. If what if your friend told you something 3 years ago, and or then I would have hit her and I would have killed her because I would feel utterly offended. So that's how she was speaking her heart. Meaning, even if her opponent, now she told me now she's not her opponent anymore. Why? In her meditation, she could overcome, completely dissolve her upadana clinging to her grudge with that. Now, so that there were no more opponent in her head. But now she said, in case she met her again, and even if her opponent insults her 1,000 times or more, and she wouldn't feel offended, and she would still smile. So then I tell, you can scare someone to death with your smile. So being able to smile is a unique talent, I see. So that's been any questions about dana, adana, and upadana? Yes, sir. Would you repeat?
Is the prefix
Oh, yeah.
related to, if it's related
Yeah, some yeah, in most of the time. Yeah, it's related, yeah. Any questions?
Asava.
Asava. Asava, yes.
In English translation would be desire or craving.
Asava is defilement. Asava and kilesa are both defilements, yeah. So asava in Sanskrit, in ashrava, actually srava. Finally. Thank you for that. Sava. Asava is Pali. Srava. Srava is Sanskrit. A long A plus SAV is Sava, or is Pali. Sanskrit is A long A plus SRAV is Srava. Sava or Srava means liquid. Liquid. Gray. Liquid that flows. It's a liquid. Srava. It keeps flowing into your mind. So that's what asava means. You get mind, it's like a river, it flows into your mind. And when you have too much attachment, you get your mind flooded with that. So that is what asava means, srava. Sava or srava means liquid. So, asava means active or coming, happening, functional. Asava. So that is why Buddha compares natthi tanha sama nadi. There is no river like craving. That's because of this nature of flowing, streaming, flooding. Sava means liquid, like water. That's defilements.
What do you mean by attachment? Is sattva or
Both, yeah. Sattva is Sanskrit. Sattva is Pali. Sattva, Sattva. Bodhisattva, Pali. Bodhisattva, Sanskrit. Bodhisattva is an English word. Now, yeah, in English dictionary, when you type Bodhisattva on a Word document, it doesn't get highlighted. Doesn't get an underline, yeah. It's an English word, Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva.
Another thing, unless I just missed this, unless we reduce our attachment, I missed that.
Unless we, oh yeah, we will,
Reduce attachment.
we wouldn't be able to progress.
Defilement.
Yeah, we would be able to reduce our defilements, so progress towards enlightenment. That is other. Next one is sila, Sila, sila. Sila, sila. Sila is long A. Use this diacritical mark hyphen to note longer pronunciation. Sila. Now, sila, that is the second paramita. Now, this is morality. The normal or general translation is morality. Moral, how to say, moral cultivation. Ethical development, moral development. It comes from the root seal to, will love the meaning, to pacify. Seal to pacify. You pacify your heart by observing precepts. That's the purpose of sila or precepts. Sila is morality or precepts. Another translation is it helps your heart cool down. Otherwise, it's on fire all the time. Your heart on fire, your life on fire. When you observe certain precepts, the precepts or the moral principles help you pacify your heart. It becomes peaceful then. So seal means to pacify, to cool down. So remember before meditation, we observe the five precepts, regardless of your religious affiliation or religious beliefs, because five precepts has nothing to do with Buddhism anyway. Now, when you observe the five, at least for the duration of meditation, you don't feel guilty. Why? After you join the group, meditation group for that day, for the day, there's no way that you commit any wrong during the meditation, because you are observing the five precepts. You get a lot of moral grounding for the purpose, so that you feel relieved. I haven't done anything wrong today after I came for the meditation. So that's the purpose of precepts or moral principles, pacify. Now, another thing is in certain predominantly Buddhist countries, like in Sri Lanka. In Sri Lanka, every full moon day is a public holiday, meaning every month got a full moon. If it's a leap year, got 13 full moons. So every full moon is a public holiday. Even during the British colonialism, they stick to the British government also stick to that policy, full moon. So it's a long, thousands of long practice started in India, full moon. Why do you observe precepts on full moon? There's a reason. And in America, and in one day we must have a full moon retreat here, maybe in the summer full moon, maybe. So on the full moon, on the full moon, your emotions are very high. This is the tide, like the moon, the ocean goes through high tide and low tide. So on the full moon, you are emotionally high. That's why the people with mental problems in English call lunatics, right? Luna means the moon. Luna means the moon. It has related with your mindset. So on the new moon or the dark, no moon, new not it's dark moon means no moon. On the dark moon, you are emotionally very down. Especially on the full moon, people observe precepts. And I have noticed something in social research also, something during the full moon, there are a lot of quarrel in certain families between partners close to the full moon due to emotional problems sometimes. And most people in psychological research, partners seek more attention from each other close to the full moon. Right? Full moon also says emotional upheaval, romance, attention seeking, emotional disturbances, high emotional upheaval and all that. So that is why people observe precepts on the full moon. Mostly they do that by themselves or as part of a group too. They do more meditation to overcome their emotional problems close to the full moon. You haven't noticed that. Do some personal research, secret research for yourself, whether you need some changes in emotions close to the full moon or close to the dark moon. The moon has 16 phases, right? So the people in ascending phases and descending phases. I forgot the exact English translation. There are different English terms for the moon, these lunar phases, the different phases of the moon. I forgot those English words. Yeah, so in traditional Buddhist countries like Sri Lanka, people would not many not that popular nowadays, instance, because people are urbanized and people are busy. I know, remember when my grandma, my mother, they would do that. They would observe the precepts on the dark moon, and then on the eighth phase of the moon, on the 15th phase of the moon, and after the 16th phase, the moon start going down. Dropping the phases, and then again, eighth of the descending moon. They do that when four times a day. They call it four poyas, four full moons. Four times a month they do that. So just to deal with their emotions, to have the scientific purpose of precepts observe full moon precepts. People do that. Now, sila is pacify, to cool down. Now, when it comes to sila, it is you choose different different levels of precepts. Maybe at least one precept. Start with one precept. By the way, all these 10 paramitas becomes 30, because each we will discuss that when we are done with the discussion of all the 10, probably next week, we will discuss how each parami is multiplied by 3. So multiplied by 3, 10 multiplied by 3 becomes 30. Normal, higher, highest. Normal, higher, highest. For now, if I just go back to the first one, just for your understanding, in case dana, you share and you give food, you share things, your belongings with others, and then you donate your organs. That is higher. Organ donation is higher, and you also sacrifice your life. And nowadays, it is very hard to hear that. I mean, you never hard to come by the news of someone sacrificing life for enlightenment. But you come a lot of birth stories of the Buddha, how Buddha gave his life to there's a famous story in one life. Bodhisattva Maitreya, the next Buddha, and Bodhisattva Gautama, the other Buddha, Our Buddha means the one who appeared. We live in his realm. They were friends. And when they were cutting through a jungle, they encountered a hungry tigress, starving tigress, and she had her cubs too. And she was so, she was unable to stand up. She was starving. And then what happens was, now they were both bodhisattvas. And while Bodhisattva Maitri was thinking whether to sacrifice his life, donate his life to the starving tigress, the moment he, before he had completed, stopped his thinking, Bodhisattva Gautama, Siddhartha, he was already there. The tigress has already started eating him, because he jumped onto the tigress and sacrificed his life. And that sacrifice gave him what is called paramita boost. That sacrifice boosted his paramitas. So that is why he could become the Buddha much much sooner. So Bodhisattva Maitri is still there, and he would be the next Buddha. Otherwise, Bodhisattva Maitri had started his paramita long before Siddhartha did. So because of that sacrifice, he got his paramita energy boosted. How could you make up your mind to sacrifice your life? That is called the highest level of paramita. We will also discuss the corresponding Pali word the next time, because there are a few more minutes left, and we will discuss Nekkhamma the next week, third one, because Nekkhamma is one of the longest, the most interesting one, Nekkhamma, the third one today. So today we have discussed two, Dana and Sila. Now, Dana, like any other paramita, is practiced in three levels, the normal, higher, and the highest. Now you got all the examples for the Dana, sharing with your belongings, sharing what you have with others, that's as you do day-to-day life, focusing on enlightenment, and you donate your organs, blood donation and organ donation, and you do that. So that is second one, higher paramita, second level. Third level is sacrifice your life for someone. So that's what this. But that is the hardest one to do. Any last questions for today?
What's the relationship between Dana and Dani?
Dana and
Dani. Like when you say you give Dani.
Uh-huh. Actually, Dana. That's the Singhalese corrupt of the Pali word.
Okay.
Yeah, Singhalese corruption of the same word. Dana. And Singhalese people call it Dani. Thank you, sis. Dani. Actually, you are not the first one to ask me that. A lot of people ask me, especially people coming to Sri Lankan temple. They ask, what is Bante Dani? Do you practice Dana or Dani? I said, that's a Sinhalese pronunciation, Dana. Dani. So,
it's also a misconception. Dani means offering something to
the... Exactly. Yeah, that's right. That is a narrow use of the term. Dana means not, yeah, that's in, especially in Sinhalese context. Dana, whenever they think Dana means offering not anything else but food, especially food to the monks, Dana. And having given after giving food, and they would offer other requisites, and they would consider they were not Dana because it's not edible something. Even if you get a packet of, like, say, cereal, granola, anything, and they would say, this is the requisites for you, parikar requisites for you. Dry food is most, you know, dana, it is the cooked food, the food that you can eat right away, or within few hours is called dana. That's the Singhalese understanding. That's a very interesting term, yeah, dana. Given to the monk, but you give something to a homeless man, and you feed the bird, that's dana. And you could say, okay, I offered dana to a bird this morning. Sometimes if you come to me and I know the context, sometimes if you go to another, maybe another Sri Lankan who is not familiar with, you give dana to a bird, not to a monk. No, I gave it to a bird. It's very cute. So that being said, thank you very much. So we are done with today. And then see you the next week.